May it please the court. My name is Eitan Kaslianich, and I am representing Martin Schiaffino in this appeal. Schiaffino is a veteran who has been found to be disabled by the Veterans Administration. In the merits decision in this case, this court held that the ALJ had erred by improperly rejecting the opinion of an examining psychologist, Dr. Thompson, and by improperly rejecting the VA's determination that Schiaffino was disabled. The court held that none of the ALJ's reasons for rejecting Dr. Thompson's opinion were convincing, and none of the ALJ's reasons for rejecting the VA disability rating were persuasive, specific, valid reasons for doing so that are supported by the record. Schiaffino filed a motion for EJA attorney's fees, but the motion was denied by the district court, which held that the commissioner's position was substantially justified.
Counsel, could you give us an example of what, in your mind, would be substantially justified?
Well, the problem here, I mean, it's easier for me to talk about what is not substantially justified, simply because in this case, the decision did not have a reasonable basis in fact, because the ALJ had failed to properly evaluate and accept Dr. Thompson's opinion and the VA finding of disability. But more so than that, it lacked a reasonable basis in law, because the ALJ did not comply with the relevant legal standards in evaluating Dr. Thompson's opinion and the VA disability determination. Now, I'll go back to your question. Are there cases where we could be sitting here and there would be a remand by the court, but there would nevertheless be substantial justification? One of the examples of that, which is cited by my opposing counsel, is Decker. But Decker involved a case where new evidence had been provided at the appeals council level, and I believe the court rightly determined that the ALJ couldn't be held accountable for not considering evidence that he'd never seen. So that's an example. The real issue, though, is the burden is on the government to show substantial justification. And to do so, they have to show both that the ALJ's decision, with regard to the issues that resulted in the remand, that part of the ALJ's decision had a reasonable basis in fact and in law. And the commissioner also has the burden of showing that they also have to have a litigation position that has a reasonable basis in fact and in law. But if the ALJ's underlying decision lacks a reasonable basis in fact and law, the court doesn't even have to look at whether or not the government was reasonable in the arguments that they raised.
Counsel, is there another layer involved in the analysis, which is that we are reviewing for abuse of discretion? So the arguments you're making might be persuasive to the district court or not, but on appeal, we are looking for whether there's an abuse of discretion.
Right. So regarding abuse of discretion, the issue, I think, is spelled out very well in the Ninth Circuit's decision in Meyer, where it states that the court stated that a district court abuses its discretion when it fails to apply the correct legal rule, or its application of the correct legal rule is illogical, implausible, or without support in inferences that may be drawn from the facts in the record. Now, the way that applies here is that this court, under the law of this case, this court has already determined that the ALJ did not state any valid reason for rejecting Dr. Thompson's opinion, and the ALJ did not state any valid reason for rejecting the VA finding of disability. And those two factors show that the ALJ's decision did not have a reasonable basis in law. The ALJ did not follow the correct legal standards. And so in looking at the district court's decision here, The district court stated in its decision and focused on the on its position that the remand addressed the weight of the evidence more than a procedural defect or a violation of rule or law. And I think that's incorrect, because the issue that was identified by the Ninth Circuit was that the ALJ had not complied with McCarty, which is the case that sets forth the legal standard involving that VA determinations of disability. And the ALJ did not comply with Ninth Circuit case law that states that an ALJ cannot reject an examining psychologist's uncontradicted opinion without stating convincing reasons for doing so. And so,
there seems to be a somewhat crossing in the night, because the district court first relies on what it earlier found, then the case comes up to the Ninth Circuit, then it comes back, and in the district court's view, for example, this issue, for example, about the disability and whether the activities such as Disneyland, et cetera, are relevant, the district court now says, well, that's just a weight of the testimony issue. That's not a legal error. What is your response to the way the district court analyzed that?
Well, for one thing, that particular issue is not, it wasn't the basis of the remand from the Ninth Circuit. The Ninth Circuit didn't so much focus on that issue, and focused more on Dr. Thompson's opinion and the VA determination of disability. And frankly, if that was also, it gets tough when you're just weighing the evidence back and forth. But on that issue, Schiaffino had not gone to Disneyland and been at Disneyland. He'd hung out in his hotel room at Disneyland so he could be there with his family. I mean, it wasn't even a good example in the first place. But I think, Judge, I think what you're pointing to, and I agree on this, is that it does seem like the district court focused more on its own analysis of the merits rather than focusing on what the Ninth Circuit had stated. This is the final determination on the merits here.
What if we were to decide that the district court abused its discretion in finding that the government's position was substantially justified in part, but not as to all issues? In other words, sort of a split decision that the agency's position was substantially justified as to some issues but not as to others. What is the remedy then?
Well, there is only one finding of substantial justification. It's an all or none concept. And so if there was
so
one
what is,
issue...
What is the authority that you rely on to suggest that it's there's only one finding?
Of substantial justification? Well, let's focus on your question then. Let's say in this case there are two issues, that each of which resulted in the remand. If the court were to find that the ALJ was substantially justified on one of those issues, but not on the other, it still means that his decision was not substantially justified on one of the issues that resulted in the remand for a new hearing. And there is I don't know of any case law that's ever split up or tried to split up substantial justification based on numerous issues. The question is, it has to be completely substantially justified. And if it isn't completely substantially justified, it isn't substantially justified.
So what is the authority you rely on for that? Is that based on your reading of the statute, or is there some case law that supports that?
Well, there isn't any case law that says the opposite, I guess, is my point. It's always been a working assumption that that's how it is, because if it's the government is the burden.
I mean, have you just researched Ninth Circuit case law, or have you looked at other circuits, for example, the D.C. Circuit, like Alfin versus NTSB, which says that the statute envisions parsing up the substantial justification issue?
In the Ninth Circuit, I've never seen any case law that says that. And even if you parse it up, once you've parsed it, unless the government can show substantial justification on all of the issues that resulted in the remand, the government's overall position was not substantially justified. And then, therefore, under the EJA, and I think you would look, it's looking at the statute. The statute doesn't break it up in any way. It doesn't say on various issues. It just says it is what it is.
So
my time is
we've
up.
We've used all your time. I will give you a minute for rebuttal.
May it please the court and counsel, Lars Nelson on behalf of the Commissioner of Social Security. This court should affirm the Chief District Court Judge because the District Court Judge's decision was not an abuse of discretion. There are four reasons that support affirming in this case. One, the District Court considered that the case was affirmed on the merits by the District Court and was only overturned on appeal. The Commissioner's, all of the ALJ's findings were grounded in established law, and most of them were connected with a string of successes in similar cases. All of the ALJ's findings had substance in the record, and the errors here only yielded a remand for further administrative proceedings. In fact, it was not clear how they would change the residual functional capacity assessment, which goes to the question of just how clear the errors were. In a case like Meyer, it was definitive that the errors were very clear.
Well, counsel, didn't a panel of this court say that the errors are not harmless because the ALJ's assessment of the RFC might change once Dr. Thompson's opinion is clarified and given the consideration of the VA's determination?
Yes, Your Honor, and nobody is challenging that. This court's decision, this matter was remanded. Further proceedings are ongoing. The question is did the commissioner and the ALJ have a reasonable basis in fact and in law in taking the positions that we did?
Well, let's back up for a minute. The Ninth Circuit panel opinion started out by addressing Dr. Thompson's assessment, the decision to give it little or minimal weight, ultimately said neither of these reasons is consistent with the record. Is that a statement of weighing or simply an absence of evidence in the record?
Well, I mean, if we go on to, I believe, the next line, the court says that the court acknowledges that the decision was vague, and then the court specifically talks about the eye contact issue and notes that there were cases where there was good eye contact and not good eye contact. So I would say in that case, this is a question of weighing, where the court ultimately decided that under substantial evidence review, that the ALJ's evidence did not cross the more than the scintilla threshold to constitute substantial evidence. But we have a different inquiry under substantial justification, and that inquiry is articulated in Hardesty. And Hardesty said, does the ALJ's decision have substance in the record? And in this case, the ALJ did in fact cite a record, the most recent one from February of 2016 by Dr. Johnson, in which the claimant did have good eye contact. And that conflicted with Dr. Thompson's opinion. It may not, in retrospect, in the judgment of this court, have been enough, but in the district court's view, that was enough and was sufficient. And it's because there was some substance in the ALJ's decision and a low standard of review, and the ALJs are charged with resolving conflicts. That's what Richardson versus Perales said. That's not uncommon that there are conflicts in the record, that it was not unreasonable for the ALJ to reach that conclusion in the face of conflicting evidence, and it was not unreasonable for the commissioner to defend that position. And that's ultimately the hurdle that the commissioner had to clear here, was there substance in the record that provided some basis for the defense. And Meyer made clear that in the typical case, the ALJ's decision and the commissioner's decision will typically be, the analysis will be one and the same. This is not a case where this court has to look at, was this the commissioner taking a different position than the ALJ? Here they're overlapping and they are one and the same.
But of course,
there was some question.
That begs the question then of the review, because there may be evidence in the record, given the low threshold to support the decision. But then when it goes back on remand, the question we're looking at is a little bit different standard, and that is the substantial justification, which now the burden moves to the government. Isn't that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
So it does seem that the shifting burdens have an impact on how we analyze it, because we're not kind of back in the administrative proceeding with the low administrative standard, but now we're looking at something where the Ninth Circuit said there's deficiencies, there's problems in this record, and now the question is there substantial justification? So with that, I want to pursue somewhat the line that Judge Beatty asked your colleague, and that is it a unitary look that we take, or do we look at different issues?
My understanding of this court's case law is that this court must look at each issue that yielded remand and ask, was there, did the commissioner have a reasonable basis in fact and in law in defending each one of those issues? Now, there is another layer to that analysis, because the court has to ask that question both for the administrative level and at the litigation stage. That is not an issue here, because the commissioner defended the ALJ's reasons and there is unity of those two positions. But those are the steps of the analysis.
So, you're taking the position that to get to whether there's substantial justification, you do look at it issue by issue. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And what's the best support you have for that frame of analysis?
The issue by issue, I think you would look at Flores and Hardesty. Hardesty in particular, there was an argument that the errors not addressed should be addressed when analyzing substantial justification. And the court was very concerned about that would lead down the path of having an entirely new litigation, whereas it's the responsibility of a court to narrow the issues and to manage judicial efficiency. And so the Hardesty court very much wanted to focus the analysis on the specific issues that yielded remand in that case.
Well, here we have, you could see that it could be characterized that there were two issues on remand, which we seem to all agree with respect to the crediting the doctor's opinion and then the ultimate decision on these inconsistencies. So just hypothetically, if we were to say that the government's position was not substantially justified on issue number one, but was on issue number two, would that lead to the conclusion that was suggested here by Mr. Janich, which is, well, if you have that kind of a split, then you do not have a substantially justified position by the government?
Your Honor, I believe that Mr. Janich is correct, that there is the most recent case law describes the standard as he has articulated. I believe that there are older cases from the 1980s where the court did piecemeal it out, but my understanding of the current status in this court, without this court having wrestled with the conflicting case law, I believe he is correct. That is an all or nothing analysis.
What is the case law you're referring to?
This issue wasn't challenged or briefed. This is just based on my familiarity as with Mr. Janich as in practicing in this area.
So you're not citing or relying upon a specific case?
I am not, Your Honor. And I think that this demonstrates how, it serves the commissioner here, because I think it goes to the scope of remand, the scope of errors. If the commissioner has to hit a bullseye on everything to be substantially justified, if there's only a few errors and where there is ambiguity in the record, I think that that gives the commissioner wider bullseye. And where the commissioner has cleared that hurdle before the district court, it shows that the commissioner, this puts it in the realm of the unusual case, which this court's case law does talk about, is that where there is a lack of substantial evidence, that it would be an unusual case where there'd be substantial justification. And again, here, there were the four factors that I think showed this is an unusual case: the affirmance, the string of successes, the all of the ALJ's findings having substance in the record, which is consistent with Hardesty, and the fact that it was the errors did not clearly direct a finding of disability. There was ambiguity in the record that reasonable minds could disagree on. And if the court doesn't have any other further questions, that's my time.
Thank you. Mr. Janich?
There we go. I've lost all of you. Let me see if I can make you appear.
You mean it's okay? You can't see us?
No, but it's, I can. Let's see. Where'd you go? Well, there you are. You're back. Okay. It's nice to see you again. So I'll just focus on a couple of things that the my opposing counsel just mentioned. He talked about a string of successes. Well, that is true in every single case that comes to district court. And it's also true in every single case that comes to the Ninth Circuit. There's always going to be a string of successes on the other side. That's why you're appealing it. That proves nothing. The other thing is that the issue of an award, the court concluding that benefits should be awarded versus concluding that there should be a remand for a new hearing. Well, that in most cases, all the court will do is remand for a new hearing, because there has to be a certain level of certainty in order to award benefits. But that is not that has once again does not define substantial justification. Back to the issue of the all or nothing, or it is, you know, if there was the fact that this court on the merits found that there was a lack of substantial evidence to support the analysis of Dr. Thompson's opinion does speak volumes about whether or not the ALJ's decision was substantially justified. And similarly, the fact that there was no that the ALJ didn't comply with the correct legal standards on regarding the VA determination and how she handled that speaks volumes about the lack of a reasonable basis in law for the ALJ's determination on that issue. So I would ask the court to award each of benefits here, which goes to the benefit of my client, because it reduces the attorney's fees he ultimately owes in the end, and because the ultimate reason here being the ALJ's decision was not substantially justified and the district court's analysis was an abuse of discretion. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to thank both counsel for argument. Very interesting case. The case just argued as Schiaffino versus the commissioner is now submitted.